Is the necromancer here yet? This is Core.
Hey everybody, welcome to Core. I'm Scott Johnson with Bo Schwartz and John Jagger, and it's an episode of Core, episode 21, and I got a question for everyone. Two questions. First question, why is this the only podcast I do, except for the morning stream, where all three of us don't have a nickname? I kind of like this. I like that we're all real naming it, man. Something to be said for that. Second of all, What hero do you think needs the most love right now? You hear a lot of complaining about Arthas, for example. In our minds, who's the sad redheaded stepchild at the moment? Who needs the most love from that team? Bo, do you have a character you'd like to see lavished with quality time?
I think it's always Nova.
Perennially Nova, yeah.
And she has a bunch of love lavished on her, but you know, I enjoy playing her, but she's a red-headed stepchild because she's in every game plaguing everybody, yet you never see her in competitive.
Yeah.
What's up with that?
Ever. So the game probably benefits from having characters that you'll never see there but fit player styles who just want to play the game. But she is always a point of consternation or happiness, depending on your side of the road, and is perpetually in a state of, oh, she may get this tweak or this nerf or this change. But she never, I feel like it's, and John, you'll probably agree with this, I think it's her core character, and I don't mean character as in Nova the character. I mean, she's just a pain in the ass by design, right? So what are you going to do? You can't change her core design.
Yeah, I don't think she necessarily plays very well into any of the current, you know, meta style play that you see the pros using as far as the tournaments go. And even when she was, you know, there's been a lot of changes to Nova. Some people really like it. Some people really hate it. But even when she was just jump out and erase you if you're in the wrong spot, Nova, she still wasn't getting picked and played. And I think it's because she's never been a particularly difficult character to counter. She might be really annoying, but at a professional level, you know, they're going to take the time and do what they need to do to hard counter her to where she's not going to be super useful. She doesn't necessarily bring a ton of utility when compared to a character like Zeratul. So I think she's maybe falling into that camp of just she doesn't have a lot of use for the pros, but you do see her a decent amount in, you know, Hero League. She'll pop up and you definitely see her in Quick Match frequently. And I think it's okay that there are characters that don't necessarily get played across the board, you know, that don't show up consistently in every single type of game. That said, my redheaded stepchild is Artanis because he never shows up in professional play except for once this weekend, which was glorious. And
I missed that match. So how'd the pick pan out? It sounds like it went all right.
It went really well. They picked him as a direct counter to Illidan, and it turned out surprisingly well. And the reason why I think he needs love is because everybody laughed when he got picked. And I felt bad because I love Artanis so much. He's my icon, usually, if I'm not, sporting my sweet Diablo portrait in the game.
Sure.
I'm a fan of Artanis. And then to have him just be that character that's joked about. They even told a story during the tournament this weekend where one of the team members got mad at his own team. And he picked Artanis just to troll his own team because he was upset. So he's even a joke internally.
Wow.
So I think he needs a little love. But
is he fundamentally flawed, or is the lack of play or the people making fun of him when he gets picked, is it because he's, you know, this weird giveaway character if you bought StarCraft and nobody really respects that or Cho'Gall or any of the characters that are these weird promo characters, for lack of a better term?
His analog characters have gap closers, whereas he only gets his at 16. I mean, if you think about Rhaegar and how this recent... I mean, everyone's talking about Lightning Shield, like a lot of great things to talk about with Rhaegar. the best, the most feel-good thing that happened to him was they made that charge baked into his base kit. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I saw a lot of comments like, now do this for Artanis. Mm-hmm. Like, being a melee character, you have to be able to, you know, jog and keep up with all the people running away from you or moving around. And he just doesn't do that till 16. I think that's the issue.
Mm. That's a good point. Yeah. If Mirrodin didn't let me hop into the fray occasionally, or out of it for that matter, I don't know that I'd play him very much. That's like a clutch basic core thing that I use in a very, I don't know, specific way with him that brings a lot of fun to who he is. And not just his lore as a dwarf and being a dwarf toss and all of that, but there's real utility in, like you said, closing that gap. I don't want to not have a tank who can't get in there. And I guess Artanis doesn't really, he has it, but he takes himself right back out. He just goes in, pokes you, comes out. And that's,
yeah, every one of his moves puts him in a position and then, you know, directly moves him outside of melee. Like, even his prism, you know, you could say, oh, well, he uses that to catch up if someone's getting away. But it doesn't put him in melee range. It still just swaps their position. So you then still have to turn around now and engage. Now, in theory, the opponent wants to walk past you, so they're going to walk into melee range. But it's not as nice as a Mirrodin who can hop into the fray or stun. You know, there's a lot of options for Mirrodin to try and get in and start hitting people. And the other thing to keep in mind with Artanis, that even despite a slight increase, he has the smallest melee range of any character in the game. So, sounds weird to say that melee characters have different ranges, but they do. And Artanis is actually the smallest. He has to be closer to his opponents than any other character in the game.
Mm-hmm. So, let's say they fix him, that'd be great, or add something to him. What would it be? Can you cancel the dash before it gets to the halfway point or something, so you stay in the fray and not zoom back out? Like, what do you think the answer is, and what happens at 13? Because I don't play him enough to remember.
So it's 16, right, Bo?
Oh, 16.
It's 16. That one of his choices are Zealot Charge.
Yeah, and basically what that is when he when you right click to attack an enemy, he rushes to them. He does the little zealot rush animation and closes on them immediately. Yeah. And I think bake that in. Like, you either need to put it as an earlier talent pick if you absolutely feel that it has to stay a talent. I think that talent feels too necessary to not just be baked in. Mm-hmm. But it either needs to be earlier in his kit or it needs to be just something he can do. And I actually think that if they did that, they would have a very strong counter to Li Ming in Artanis.
Oh, yeah, good point. Because best he can do now is zip-zap and get out. Yeah. Or
let him cancel his prism dash. The other issue is that he has a slash dash. He spins out. He spins back. He's got to do the full animation. Mm-hmm. So if you were able to do that, put it on a higher cooldown maybe, and start slash dashing it. Where are you going to stop? Who knows? That would also be interesting, and they wouldn't have to change much, just that little element.
Yeah, and you just whack the same key again to stop him. So, yeah if he zooms in, I want to stay here now, and give you the option still, right? Like, you can still do full animated get out, but if you're in a situation where, like, no, I need to stay closed in, you can just cancel by hitting it, and bam, you are where you are. I think that's a great solution as well, or, you know, potential solution, or I guess a way of baking it in without specifically baking it in. And maybe by doing that, though, you eliminate the need for that 16 pick and you can put something else in there. I don't know.
It's just the game design in terms of all the heroes puts the bar at a certain level and you're either below or above it. Like, I can think of countless heroes that have ways to move around. Mm-hmm. And I remember them talking about Artanis being this, he's the first in the fight. He doesn't retreat from the fight. He has this very stoic move forward kind of attitude, except everyone can move forward faster than him. Like, yeah. They can just, you know, if it's time to move forward, they're all way past him. If it's time to run away, then he gets left alone. So,
and he's the first one. Okay, so maybe he's the first one in the fight, but he's only in it for about a half a second before he zips back out to where everyone else is. Like, it doesn't really hold, you know? And he does have, like, if we just want to get down to his attitude, he's your man. He's like, you know, we've got to do it. He's basically just, let's go and save the world. But you gotta give him more ways to do it. So I think I'm in agreement on Artanis.
Who's yours?
Arthas. Scott. Arthas is for me. I don't have any desire to play him. And partly because everybody treats him like he's useless and boring, but also because he plays boring. He's not fun to play. He's just sort of, he feels like first thing they made when they said, you know what we ought to do? Make a MOBA. And he was like the first character they made, which is fine. He's just very vanilla, very straightforward. Maybe there need to be heroes like that. I don't know. But they've gotten so creative, especially as of late, with what they have heroes capable of doing without making things too complicated. I just feel like he's a weird afterthought and he ought to be reworked.
He's sword guy.
Yeah.
Which is weird because he's one of the most iconic Blizzard characters in their universe.
If not the most iconic.
Yeah, I would argue that there have been few Blizzard villains, because you can only kind of count Diablo, who's changed from game to game, who have had the staying power of Arthas. I mean, it was like 10 years that Arthas was the main villain before he got dealt with. Maybe not quite that long, but he was around for a long time as this like active force. They didn't have to resurrect him either.
No, he would just be there sitting on a stupid frozen toilet. Waiting for this big day.
You know, Arthas is so unloved that when you ask that question, through the entire time we've been discussing, I've been trying to look for another answer other than Nova, just to see if I would change it. And Arthas didn't even come to mind. I'm looking at the list of heroes, and he didn't even jump out to me.
Wow. Yeah. He's just
how bad it is.
He's just not there. He's like he's just under the radar. And I think they can do a lot to fix him. Because I'll tell you straight up, honestly, I felt this way about Rhaegar before they fixed him. Or not fixed him, but tweaked him. I thought Rhaegar was boring to play. And that is not true anymore. Rhaegar is all kinds of buckets of fun with changes that didn't seem like they were all that drastic. They just brought the fun back to that character. I am fully in the camp of believing Blizzard has the capability to turn Arthas into something special, like he was always meant to be. He's the crown.
They turned him into the Lich King.
He's the crown prince of Lordaeron, and he's got the he's got all the shit, so he's good. All right, let's move on to talking about, let's talk about our video channel again. We've mentioned it before, but there's some cool things happening there. We got Heroes Charity Brawl recaps and stuff. There are two more of those going up. I need to get those up tonight. There's a Getting Started video that John put together regarding Murky. I wish it was called Regarding Murky. That'd be really good.
That'd be a pretty good name. Yeah. Also, I think you should watch it and then buy Murky.
Okay.
Or buy Murky and then watch it.
I think I made didn't I cave and get him for like 2,400 gold or something? I don't know.
I know you were awfully close.
Yeah, I was close to doing it. And people like it when I do that on the show, but I've moved my streaming stuff so I can't reach it now. So sorry, everyone. I'm not going to spend money while we're on the show now.
I know. People do like the peer pressure.
They do like it. They like seeing me cave. But the video's great. People should be checking that out. And very soon, we will have... Well, there's a link on it if you go to frogpants.com/core. And hopefully soon, we'll have a nice vanity URL for YouTube people that just want to go straight there. But definitely worth checking out. And we plan on putting a ton more there.
Yeah, we got... Bo's got a video coming up, if you want to tease that, Bo.
I wish I would have... This would have gone up sooner, because we talk about Cho'Gall. And he made such a big impact this weekend at the North America Finals.
Did it? Did he?
Did they?
I should say. I've missed so much of this competitive stuff. There was so much crap going on this weekend. And I know we're going to talk more about it later, but I didn't know Cho'Gall made a big splash. That's great.
Not only did he get played multiple times, but he was a frequent ban as well.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. So what does that mean? Yeah. Do you think that means we all should start accepting the fact that Cho'Gall is awesome, or what?
Just to give you the sneak preview, because I talk about in the videos that even I'm guilty of poo-poo. You know, oh, we're in Hero League, and someone picks Cho'Gall, and you're like, again. Mm-hmm. And actually, I was streaming, so I was able to catch the match, catch me being kind of salty about it, with all the counter picks on the other team. And, you'll have to tune in to watch the results. But the end thing is that I think we're wrong as a community about Cho'Gall.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. I think
about his viability in competitive and high-level play.
It just feels like he's stealing an extra slot, and people have a hard time getting over that. You know? Like, even though it's not really, it feels like he's taking up two slots where you could have a full viable character, and people just have a hard time getting past that bias, I think.
You could have two really great players on Cho'Gall, but if they don't play well together, it'll suck. Like that, the key is not only how good you are, because when you're Muradin, Scott, you can be like, oh, time to dwarf toss out, push Avatar. You can manage all this stuff. On Cho'Gall, you have to tell the other guy, okay, I need to run, push the run button. Like, you can't do that yourself. So there's a lot of bobbing and weaving that requires that coordination. Mm-hmm. And especially in competitive, when you're already yelling over TeamSpeak a whole bunch of other stuff, like, get that guy and do this and blah, 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 blah. Like, to also have to manage communication. Like, that's basically the person you with, it needs to be like, I don't know, is it identical twins? What are the twins that, like,
you know, the ones that are connected?
Yeah, like,
those are,
I don't know.
Siamese just twins, just a word, I think. Siamese
there's
twins.
There's a word for when.
A conjoined twin.
There's a word for when you don't need to speak and yet you know what the other person's thinking and you're so in sync that you're.
Oh, what
just,
is that
you know,
word? Yeah. Oh, it's on the
Professor
tip
of- Xavier.
No, it's like a
symbiosis, maybe.
Symbiotic relationship. Oh. Symbiotic relationship. That's it.
You have to, that there has to be real, like, good link between the two players to make that really work. So I think it's like only venture here if you dare. But I think also saying, well, they're terrible is kind of just the feeling you get when you lose with a bad Cho'Gall and not reflective of his actual value. So,
okay.
Yeah.
I'm gonna have a hard time not thinking about Goa'uld worms inside of like Teal'c in Stargate. So thanks for that symbiotic relationship. Yeah, I guess I could do Dax. Right? She had a worm in her in Deep Space Nine. Wasn't that the deal?
Yeah, she had a symbiote. So did Spider-Man.
Oh,
and
that's
that
right.
Became Venom.
That's right. So. But he wasn't. Was Venom inside Spider-Man, or was he just around hanging all over him?
He was like his suit.
Okay. It wasn't all tucked up in his anus or something and then just would come out and go, blah, I'm Venom now. It wasn't like,
you know,
that.
The suit was real tight.
They didn't explore it all the time. Sometimes you wondered where the suit went, yeah. But, you know.
I mean, he might have got a little in there. You know.
It's a hot day.
He might have got a little in there.
You might not want to, you know, put your mouth on that part of the symbiote.
Yeah,
it'd be dirty.
I don't know where. Oh, we don't know where that symbiote has been.
Because he's naked under the symbiote, right? Like, he doesn't have to wear underwear and stuff with the symbiote.
As far as
no,
I know.
It could mimic his clothes, too. So he was, like, basically naked all the time. But, the symbiote days of Peter Parker, he was just a constant nude.
Yeah.
It's a whole lot of ball sweat on that symbiote suit.
Always nude. Anyway. Listen, the important thing is that we're not afraid to venture into weird offshoot land like Star Wars last time. Apparently people loved that. So occasionally it'll come up, and if we think Spider-Man needs a little talking to, we'll talk about him for a minute. Welcome to the new segment on the show. Stuff that's got nothing to do with Heroes. Of the Storm, that is. Zool, coming out tomorrow. It's happening. Get excited, get pumped, start raising some skull or some corpses. What else? Get a big scythe that comes out of nowhere and cut you, and put up a bone jail. What's it called? Bone skin.
bone prison.
Bone prison.
I want you to keep guessing because it's gonna get real good.
Bone municipal jail holding cell, whatever it is.
Bone jail is exactly why I don't want to go to jail.
Well, he's coming out tomorrow. I'm really excited, and I think I have appropriate gold to perhaps.
I have an announcement to make with respect to Zool.
Oh, you do, do you?
Because I've been playing so much Overwatch, I don't have the gold to buy him, and I'm not waiting the 2 weeks that I did last time. So I'll be purchasing him with cash.
Yeah, you got
it.
Oh man,
look at that.
Doubloons.
Yeah. Too bad you can't buy it with sprays you're never going to use from Overwatch. Wouldn't that be nice if we could cash those in and use them in Heroes? I don't want 90%
of them.
Can I cash
in? What's the exchange rate of overbucks to gold? Is it good?
I don't know, but the dollar is strong, and they're both suffering as a result. So
Zool is going to be a fantastic counter, it seems, to Cho'Gall. I mean, you got to kind of add that disclaimer right now because we haven't really had a chance to play him yet. Yeah. But Zool, looking at his talents that have kind of leaked and been data mined, has a lot of percentage hit point based damage to his abilities that you can add. He looks like he's going to be have the potential to go very heavy anti-tank, mm-hmm. Which is exciting. And man, Cho'Gall is going to be afraid of this guy.
Yeah, I'm genuinely excited about this character, maybe as much as I was for Lei Ming. I'm partial to the Diablo stuff anyway, but also after watching his introduction video, it seems he's just doing some very interesting things. And I don't know if anyone else listening has had a chance to watch that, but if you haven't, make sure you go check it out on the Heroes of the Storm YouTube channel and know what to expect, because it seems all right. The one thing they don't explain in that video, and I've been too lazy to go look further, but when he raises the dead, from the dead minions. Is there a limit to those numbers? I assume there is. You can only do so many, or is it?
I think it's four.
Okay, that's not bad.
Yeah, I want to say four.
All right.
Yeah.
So it's not just how many, and they don't, and if they do, they live until they're killed like a normal minion is killed.
Yes, but they also, and this kind of bums me out. They also behave like minions. It kind of works like Sylvanas's possession. So you don't create a little army that follows you everywhere you go.
Oh, you basically they stay in are lane converting and push. Minions.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. Hmm. Still worth 15,000 gold though. I think. Yeah. Yeah. Whatever. It's not like they're not going to make him so OP that any minion he ever kills is with him forever. But he seems great and looks really fun, and I'm really excited about him. So I guess we're all planning on checking him out tomorrow.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. He's we'll be having to take turns, probably.
Is he a PTR right now or no?
No PTR this time.
Weird. Wonder what that means.
Which is odd because I thought the reason they wouldn't do it is because there wasn't going to be a patch, but apparently there's also going to be a patch.
Yeah.
Although it could just be kind of a small one, but... That was the reason why we got a PTR last time, was because Li Ming came in with a pretty significant patch to the game, which is what they're actually testing when they do PTR. It's not so much hero balance as it is just, hey, is all that new stuff we put in working?
Well, let's hear a little bit of his lore just for fun. Here you go.
Forward unto darkness.
All right.
The enigmatic necromancers hold a belief that all creation exists in a delicate balance between light and darkness. Should either side gain control, the world of Sanctuary would fall into ruin.
So this guy comes along and says, all right, I'll be your man, whatever. So anyway.
I'll be the balance man. Bear. The guy who narrates that, I could have sworn he's done narration for, like, GameStop. I keep expecting him to sell me like a player card or something.
Yeah, there is something.
It's that dude.
Who is it? Who's the guy? Because he has that voice.
He used to cast early on. He used to cast with Trickslayer. I want to say, is it Kevin Johnson?
Oh,
I think is it like no. Oh, it's a Blizzard guy.
I didn't know that. Really? So he's like an employee there.
Yeah, he was. They were doing back when Trickslayer and the. I'm sure it was Kevin Johnson, the other guy. Like they were doing their own internal shoutcasting before they got. Professional casters.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that guy's still doing the trailer work.
Well, he's good.
Yeah, he does a good job.
But you're not wrong. It sounds like if you order Pokemon Blue now, you'll get a free thingamajigger.
Like power to the player.
Power to the player. Yeah. Buy the magazine and you'll get a discount. Like, he's totally that guy for whatever reason. Good for him. I think this is all we're going to ever get, though, by the way, is this this kind of introductory video where they don't do a full animated thingy. They just go straight to what he does, but they have that little bit of sketchy painterly lore at the beginning. I think this is the new standard. This is all we're ever going to get again. And I'm a little sad about it, to be honest. Because what are they going to do? They'll do, like, when they have an event, like, oh, our Warcraft event. Right? The music's playing, everything's going crazy, and they'll animate a bunch of dudes doing things, and they'll make a huge deal out of that kind of stuff. But I think character by character, I think we're done with, like, those intros.
I was hoping it was going to come back because I felt like a case could be made that the video for Greymane, Lunara, and Cho'Gall was what we saw at BlizzCon. Yeah. Like, that was their video, all three of them together.
Sure.
But then we didn't get anything for Li Ming or Zul, so maybe it is gone. And they did say they don't want to do it for every character just when it feels appropriate, but then they give Space Lord Leoric his own video and...
Yeah, which is the skin. Know. That was something else there. I guess they're maybe they just want to sell stuff when they do it. I don't know.
During the Heroes the championship this weekend, I happened to swing by Reddit between matches.
Yeah.
And one of the top thread actually was, you know what? They're playing all these ads in between matches, and it makes me want them to make new trailers again. Like, that was the thread. It was the most upvoted thing. There's like 1,200 up. That's pretty high for that Reddit.
Yeah.
And a lot of people were expressing just what you guys are, which is like, actually, maybe bring them back. Maybe they're okay.
Plus, it's like, nice, you know, it's a nice thing to see when you're forced to take those breaks between matches and commentary. And
I saw the "I'm searching for an apprentice," and I immediately thought of John and watched a trailer and loved it. I was like, oh yeah, the trailer was good.
Yeah.
The Johanna one's amazing because she's got that little like. group of followers who are just watching her beat up everything, and they're not helping at all.
No, they're the worst team you've ever had. They're terrible.
And Murky's there, and he's just happy.
Yeah, but she suddenly has an ability that knocks a character 60,000 feet away from her, which is kind of nice. I don't know why that's not in the game, but whatever. Yeah. That's one of the problems that they run into, right? Is they can't depict things that you can't. I mean, they sometimes do this, but it's a slippery slope. You depict things the character does in the video that she can't or he can't do in the game, and that's sometimes a little tricky. You know, you're selling a false bag of goods, perhaps.
I think my favorite one is the Vikings one, because if you watch those videos and you go back and you look through them, it is there to sell you on the fantasy of the character. Mm-hmm. Like, look at Johanna, you're going to be crashing down from the sky and throwing your shield, and here's a big bright flash. Like, all abilities that she has. But the Vikings one is just them constantly complaining about being lost and running away from things.
Yeah, yeah, basically. And Murky's all about revenging his dead Murky brothers or whatever, some shore in the middle of Warcraft. Like, I miss them, is all I'm getting at. And I would love it if there were more. That's all.
One of the things that about the trailers, actually, when I think about all the best ones, and the vast majority of them are goofy, I think when I think of other MOBAs, they're not necessarily going for that humor style, which is good, but I think they lean too heavy on that foot. I think the Artanis one was the only really serious one I can think of. Like, the Butcher one was goofy. I guess
Butcher one is so good.
Yeah.
That might be my favorite. I might have to take it back, because that one is like a horror movie wrapped in a brief little trailer.
It's pretty good. I still think my favorite is the Asmodan's. I love that one. For whatever reason, that one hits me in the right place. I think it's the music, because it's that crazy guitar Diablo thing, like the hardcore heavy metal one. I really like that trailer. That one's
great. And the Zul one actually hit a lot of high notes too. They had basically all D2 tracks in there.
Yeah, that stuff's good.
And that was like, oh, I love all that. There was like no Heroes of the Storm stuff. It was like all D2 tracks. That was really great.
Speaking of which, when does this lunar thing end? We over soon? Soon, right?
Today, oh, I think.
Gosh, guess think who didn't today. Guess who didn't get all of his his games in?
You didn't get your monkey portrait?
No, stupid freaking Overwatch, man. Just killed me. It freaking killed me these last 2 weeks. Just murdered any chance I had of getting anything done meaningful in Heroes other than playing with friends. That's it.
You know what? It's a JPEG. If you really want it, you could probably find it on Google image search. Like, I hate to be that way about portraits, but
it's a good point. You know, it's a JPEG.
You got to put it in perspective. Mm-hmm. It's a JPEG.
Yeah,
you didn't get the JPEG.
And the truth is, a two-dimensional flat JPEG has no perspective at all. So don't worry about it, everyone. If you didn't get the JPEG, don't worry about it. You know what? You've helped me. It made me feel better about it. It's fine. Yeah. I don't have to click on that shit ball monkey anymore. Done with the monkey. All right. Sneak peek, couple of things coming up, some features that were talked about on the official blog. They posted about expanding observer slots. They're going to increase it to 6 observers. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but currently it's what, 2?
2. Yep.
2. That's a big jump to 6.
Yeah, I'm not sure what informs the 6, but I'm pretty sure this has to do with casting. Like, what's needed, because you need more than the 2 casters. You probably need someone who's in there capping replays for the highlight reel at the end, somebody who's just controlling the observation.
Yep.
Referees, perhaps. Maybe. So,
ooh, yeah. Referees. Ooh, that's an interesting thought. But how would you do that, though? Like, you can't go, Diablo, beep, you're out. You've penalty box. Like, how do you do it?
Well, I don't know. That sort of came from the same place that the Spider-Man symbiote came from. But I don't even know what that means.
Peter Parker's ass.
We know what that means.
Yeah, we know what that means. We got you.
But, you know, because you assume the game, you know, has rules, so it takes care of all that stuff. But I don't know. There might be just someone in there observing for whatever reason that might not have to do with casting, but officiating in some way that we're not really aware of, because, you know, those guys who compete, they do have to follow rules. As someone who organized Hero Pants, we had to keep some rules in place to make sure, you know, everything was fair. Sure. So I can only imagine on an official scale what that might look like. And, you know, maybe there's an officiant, yeah, an official, a referee,
officiant, referee, or I like the technical angle where there's people who can, you basically have eyes on all parts of the map and all the different actions. So if there's a split push happening that's of particular interest to a competitive professional match, it's probably nice to have some good switching between two very distinct viewpoints, not having to float around the map to find it.
Oh, they had Cameron. Which one had camera and camera? There was one production recently that they did camera and camera.
Oh, yeah. What was that? It was that crowdfunded tournament.
Oh,
I heard what they did with that though. That was, how'd they do that? There was some actually pretty basic things going on. Somebody was just doing screen capture of,
Chaining.
Yeah. Like, so one player's view would be screen capped and thrown up there periodically. Like they basically were doing what the game should support innately. They were doing it kind of a back doorway. I can't remember what it was, but anyway, something like that. I just think this gives them opportunities with six slots like that. There is a lot that four non-casters can do to really beef up your production.
Well, you got to keep in mind too. There's something that we kind of haven't hit on, which is that the casters are not actually the cameramen. So when we're watching a tournament, you're not watching what the caster is showing. You're watching what a third party cameraman, essentially, if you think of it that way, is showing, which means that the cameraman is listening to what the casters are saying and trying to give them the best view that they can based on what the casters are talking about. And in turn, the casters are also typically sharing, because there's only one other observer slot, one screen to try and determine what the action is. This also means that, you know, theoretically you could have the cameraman and both casters in there so they can focus on different things. And another thing that I have heard talk about is this allows them the ability to simulcast in other languages to some degree, because if they have commentators that are doing another language, they have to try and go off of what a cameraman is doing, who is going off of what an English commentator is talking about, and there's no ability for them to control it. So you've got kind of this daisy-chained commentary system going with no control over what's going on. Having more casting slots allows for somebody to be controlling the camera dedicated to maybe that language if they're doing a second language.
Yeah, and if the casters all share a screen like they currently do and stay that way, you could, in theory, have up to three simulcasts with everyone having their own cameraman, right?
Yeah.
I think I have the math.
I don't even think the casters would even control any of it, to be honest. I think they'd get they'd get multiple screens.
Yeah,
because they're busy casting. You never see their hands on mouse. Like, ideally, in the more professional productions, they don't touch anything.
Well, that's true, and they wouldn't even in the current setup. It's just that they would only have, because there's only two observer slots, they only get. Well, I don't know what their tools are like there, though. They're using different.
You noticed it this weekend when, like, they were talking and the camera was following something, but the more interesting story was the 1v1 skirmish in some other lane, and the cameraman wasn't going there, and they'd kind of hint at, like, oh, what's going on in the bottom lane? Oh, looks like that Lee Ming got taken out, and you never get to see it. Mm-hmm. And that's probably to do, like, I'm trying to figure out why that happened, because definitely, narratively, the more interesting thing was that other thing, even if you're someone looking at a map, and it's like, oh, 4v4 up here, it must be the better story, but nothing's happening really there.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So I don't know how they decide on the fly where to go, but, like, that's, like, part of the art, I think, of doing this casting thing. These guys.
Well, there's a quote here regarding another upcoming feature, ability cooldown announcements. The quote is this from Blizzard, quote, on your way to a team fight and your heroic ability just came off cooldown. Well, Alt plus click the ability icon and a message will pop up in chat letting your team know that the ability is ready and it's a great time to engage, unquote. Essentially, we're not going to take credit for this because we were talking about it offline where nobody would hear it. But when we were playing a recent game of Overwatch, we were talking about how nice it would be if Overwatch, like you hit Z in Overwatch and it tells everybody what the status of your ultimate is, that if something like that could happen in the other game would be great. And there are a few things I think they should take out of Heroes and take back over to Overwatch. Like, for example, death timers that are up visible on the screen, slowly moving over to zero, I think would be really helpful in a game where you're like, well, where is everybody? Oh, three of us are dead. All right, hold back. Like, that sort of stuff would be very helpful in there. But anyway, it's nice to see this. This is a good feature that will, certainly in quick matches or other games where we're not on long comms, you can very quickly sort of ping out where you're at with your ultimate and get a better general idea whether you should rush in or not.
Yeah, this is great. I thought one of the best quality of life updates was the hearth thing. When you push the hearth button, it tells as an announcement. Yeah. I loved that. That changed things.
Yeah.
So this is great. More of it.
Yep. More feedback. North American Finals happening this weekend. You guys have to have impressions. You've seen a bunch more than I have. This will lead to the next round, which is the South Korea stuff, April 1st through 3rd. And you can get some more portraits. So that's more JPEGs, really. That's what that comes down to.
Yeah, more JPEGs.
Cloud9 looks to be this round's big winner. Yeah, so let's just take it around. Who saw the most or who saw whatever they want to talk about? What do you guys think of the play?
I think I probably saw the most.
Yeah. I caught the last match, actually, the one that didn't matter because they're both going. And then just matches here and there. Like what would happen is I'd watch one match and then I'd be like, I don't want to play Overwatch. And I go play Overwatch. <You know? laughs> And then I'd take a break and I'd sit down and watch a match. And they had no idea where what's happening. But the matches were definitely very interesting. And I'm actually going to go back and check out a lot of the VODs, especially for the qualifying ones that were, you know, they had the most on the line, win or lose.
Yeah.
Yeah. This was a fascinating tournament to watch because basically if you have watched previous Heroes esports tournaments, this looked very different from a hero draft standpoint, from a how they're playing standpoint. Obviously the team comps got shaken up a bit. There are people that were on, you know, teams that are now no longer there and they're on different teams and vice versa. It's a crazy new season and it's really exciting. And probably my favorite bit was just, you know, heroes that are typically just, I thought it would be nothing but Li Ming and Rhaegar, and they definitely had a big presence and were felt for sure. Like, I don't want to make it sound like they were never picked, because they absolutely were picked and banned almost 100% of the time. Yeah. But we saw Cho'Gall and Anub'arak and Artanis and the Vikings, and Kael'thas was not picked or banned once. Wow. A character who has dominated every single tournament up to this point as being either picked or banned almost 100%, didn't make a single appearance in the entire tournament.
Do you think that okay, this may be a very esoteric question, but I want to get your opinion on it. Do you think that that is a result of the actual nerfs, but, you know, that he's just clearly not viable at that level of play anymore? Or was this a message from the pro players to say, we do not like what you did to him, so therefore we're pretending he's not even here anymore?
I don't think he's viable at that level of play. Mm-hmm. I think he's maybe viable. Maybe saying he's not viable is a little harsh, but I think what you're seeing is you're seeing pro teams who would rather take first Li Ming. If they can't get Li Ming, then they take Jaina. If they can't get Jaina, they take Tassadar. And if they couldn't get any of those heroes for some reason, then maybe they would have taken Kael'thas. Mm-hmm. I just think he's really low on their priority list right now.
They would have skipped it, man. You even skipped out on two of the heroes that also made appearances. I saw pretty much every game I watched, nearly every game. There's Lunara.
Oh, yeah.
Remember my girl Lunara? It's like, Lunara's so bad. It's like, Lunara's, I think she lost a lot of the matches that she was picked on, but she was picked over Rainer and Vala as the auto attack go-to champion. Mm. So I think she would be high on the pick list. And we saw Greymanes all day. Like, yeah. You know, hearing some of the commentary leading up to this thing where it's like, you know, Li Ming's really great and some of the other heroes, they're not so great, all had a huge presence here and looked awesome. They were, the Greymane and Lunara are super badass, and it was great to see them in there. The other thing we saw too was a return to people trying to no-tank Illidan. I think I saw two matches of no-tank Illidan. I think they were both losses too. But it's nice to see Illidan, because there were teams with Illidan that won games, and that guy's also been a redheaded stepchild and competitive, and we saw him a lot this time around.
Nice.
Yeah. It was a really fun tournament. I will tell you this. We're going to be talking a little bit later in the show about team fighting. Mm. And if you want to see the separation between what makes a like rank tier one team versus what makes everybody else, watch the way Cloud9 team fights. Mm. It is a thing of beauty, because whereas most teams are about condensing down into a tight little ball and just, you know, throwing as much burst damage at that ball and see who comes out of it alive. Cloud Nine spreads out to where they actually have to typically, for a Cloud Nine team fight, they actually have to zoom the camera out as far out as it'll go. And they are fighting all over the map, multiple different fronts, picking off characters in wildly different positions and rotating all around within it. It is like watching art. It's very, like, I know that sounds super hyperbolic to just be like, oh, it's like watching art, but it really is. Like, you just get caught up in it and you think, oh my gosh, this team is incredible.
Yeah.
No, they had some fumbles, though. I mean, they won in the long run, but
there was
the one game that's worth watching where I want to say they copied us, Scott and John.
Whoa.
You know, they were losing the whole match. I think it was a Tempo Storm match, and they were just getting their butts pounded like super hard.
Yeah.
And they won a team fight in the end and then just took the card.
That is definitely,
I was like, that's from our playbook.
That's definitely a card. That's a card out of our win occasionally book for sure.
It's exactly what it looked like. Cloud Nine. Oh my God. Tempo Storm coming back. They're doing so good. They want to get up. Oh, they died and it's game over.
Yeah.
It was pretty funny. Yeah, so,
good. They're good. They're a great team and they deserve all they get. And also that I have a pop quiz. You guys aren't ready for this, are you? I got a pop quiz about KT since he's down on everybody's luck right now and he's not being picked. Let's find out how much you know about Prince Kael'thas. All right. So, John, here's a question for you.
Okay.
He's a powerful mage and he's part of the shadowy high council of the Kirin Tor. What is he a member of within the Kirin Tor? What is the subgroup, his little exclusive club?
I don't know this one.
The answer is the Six. He is part of the Six. Bo, this one's for you. If you get this right, you win the whole war. You ready?
Nice. Oh,
this is the two-question quiz, I see.
During what war was the Scourge invasion of Kael'thas?
Well, this is easy. This was an answer last time we did a quiz.
Is it? Was it really?
Oh, the first war?
You are? No.
The second war. Second war.
Third war.
Third war.
Third war. Congratulations, neither of you win. It was a horrible showing. May God have mercy on your soul. All
right. I got Bo's question right.
Yeah, you did.
This time and the last time it was a question, too.
Always a way to win. All right. Yeah. Anyway, finals, they're great. More stuff happening. There's a new matchmaking rule. Check this out. Post on the Heroes Forums from Mr. Spyrian. Did I say his name right? I think I do. About a new matchmaking rule. Spyrian.
No, let's call him Spyrian.
Spyrian. Okay. All right.
Let's keep it simple.
He says this, from now on, this is a quote, it will be very unlikely that you will encounter more than one of the following heroes in the same quick match team. Abathur, Cho'Gall, Lieutenant Morales, Murky, Nova, the Lost Vikings. All right, so more than one, meaning much less likely to have a mirror match against any of those characters. As with
If you have one of these on your team,
yeah,
you won't have one of the others.
Oh! I thought it was you wouldn't face the other team with one.
No, this is a cooperative thing. So you could be Abathur and face an Abathur. This is more if you pick Abathur, you probably won't find a Cho'Gall or a Morales on your team or a Murky.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. Now, that doesn't mean in Hero League or any other draft situation, custom game or whatever, you could do whatever you want. But this is saying in quick match, you're going to have a far less chance. As with all of the team composition restrictions we've implemented so far, parties can still bend this rule. That means that you can still see heroes like Abathur and Cho'Gall on the same team if those players enter the queue as a party. There are two other exceptions to these, Bo. What are they?
If you're matched against a team that has two of the above heroes, such as Murky and Abathur, your team will also receive two of the listed heroes. So if someone parties up as Abathur, Murky, Lost Vikings, well, maybe your team is also going to have Abathur, Murky, Lost Vikings. Since you guys love playing those heroes so much, you can go to that hero's heavens. That was awkward, but the rest of us don't have to play with you guys.
Okay.
You can just play Lost Vikings versus Lost Vikings all day. Right. Second one is auto select does not yet abide by the new restriction. Not like the dude. The dude abides. Right. Auto select does not abide. This means that if you have one of the above heroes and an auto select on your team, that auto select may become one of the listed heroes.
Interesting.
Yeah. I've seen a few auto selects.
And they'll support that in the future. with some sort of patch. But this is fine. This is a fine thing. But it feels like a moving target because they're going to be, as you put new heroes into the mix, this obviously changes. It's own brand of meta now going on.
And I can't wait till a few months now. People are like, oh, I hate Kael'thas on my team. Always Kael'thas. He's so bad.
Yeah. He's terrible. What's his win rate since the change? Do we know what that is? Is it bad?
It's low. I don't know what it is.
It's gone down, but
we're around the water cooler.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, there's water. I want to go to a water cooler where I talk about it here. I guess that's what this is right now, isn't it? This is basically it's a virtual water cooler. A VWC. All right.
I had VWC once. Was it funny?
Okay, I found him. He is low. He is 46.4 win percentage. He's so low that I forgot what the column was. Yeah, he's 46.4. He's actually moved up a little bit. Far less games played than typically. He's below Brightwing and above Lieutenant Morales.
Man, he really does feel cut down. Like, it feels bad to see him
I'd like to point of order that a little bit by saying he was never an amazing win rate hero, at least at the beginning he was. But for a long period of time before Li Ming, he was a popular hero with a just slightly above 50% average win rate. Like, he's oppressive. He's definitely a must pick. Mm-hmm. But he isn't like, I pick Kael'thas and win.
Yeah. Right. He did have a high popularity. His popularity has dropped to 33.9%.
Yeah, he's plummeted. He's like a president who slept with a monkey and everyone found out about it or something. Like, down.
Which my brain needed like a full minute to process the words that you are saying.
Yeah, it didn't come out exactly right,
is this in a Stephen King book or something?
No.
Dream this last night?
I was just thinking of like, what's a good controversy for like a notable leader or something? And all I could think of was having sex with a monkey.
It's just in, Obama and a monkey together. Michelle speaks more at 11.
Yeah, she's done. She's out. That's it. I thought he was done with the primates. I'm leaving. Anyway, where are we now? I don't even know. Oh, yeah. Auto select does not yet abide. Oh, yeah, I talked about that. No abiding auto select. Drop of the week. That's a throwback for me. Sounds of the Storm. Great site for getting sounds from the game. Client for your phone and fan projects. This is actually very useful for us for some of the video stuff we want to start doing. It's a github.io thing. There's a link here. We'll probably put it on Twitter or something so people can follow it. But yeah, like, for example, here I am clicking on a dude. Let's see. Let's click on Li Ming here. What do we have for her? We've got a nice long load time. Servers are in offshore drilling servers. Okay, here we go. Here you go. I'll just play one of these. All good. AI, good job, it says. Oh, man, it's real slow. It really may be some Russian server somewhere or something, right?
You want to hear Li Ming. I play for you.
They're doing it manually. Okay. Yeah, they're not working for me.
I don't know. Oh, well, that's weird because they're working for me.
Are you in there?
Danovsky, get the Li Ming file for our American friend.
Sometimes, whatchamacallit acts funny. Let me try it again.
Perhaps I'm not the only prodigy here after all.
Ah, there you go. It's working now.
No, retreat. I am. Nice to meet you.
Yeah, this is very nice. How about this one? So it's the black hole despawn. So there's all the sound effects, the voice work, all of it. So, very nice.
Yeah, and they even have the specific ones for the skins, too.
Oh, they do? Oh, that's cool.
We need some Mecha Tassadar.
Yeah.
That's what we need.
Let's see. I'm going to find some of that business. Main menu.
Yep, okay. He's in there.
All right.
We need to prove to people that this I do not know you line exists.
I don't know you. Okay. Where is he? He's right here. Okay, Tassadar. That didn't work.
Oh, man.
That's not good at all. I can
good luck finding it.
Coming in the air tonight. Yeah, his thing is huge. Just take that out of context, everybody. Let's see.
So be it.
Okay, great. How about?
Remain vigilant.
All right. How about this? Nope, that ain't it. I don't know where. It's really
he
hard.
Found the Spider-Man symbiote.
It's really hard. Okay.
Hold on. He laughed at my joke.
Gosh, that's loud. Okay, all right. Okay, sheesh. Holy shit. Yeah, I can't find it. It's in here somewhere. Somebody wants to find that and send it to us, do that. Yeah.
But there's if you want to use these for your projects, there's also a download button where you can just download, I think, a zip file and play with them.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, this is a cool little site.
It's pretty good.
Just found it on
Fire that. Will be restored. Abomination.
Oh, he's killing a Zerg there.
By the way, the Deckard Cain stuff's in there, too. If you scroll all the way down to the bottom.
What?
Yep.
You're
Go
right.
Go back to the main menu, scroll to the bottom, and there's the Uther stuff. And the Deckard Cain stuff.
Oh, Uther menu stuff makes me happy. Where's the one where he talks about the store? Well,
greetings, friend. It seems you've encountered a treasure goblin.
Oh, I miss that. Here's another one.
Congratulations.
Okay, we know about
that. My. Oh, it appears our goblin friend has escaped.
Oh, well, who the hell played that game there? I never heard that once.
Well,
all right, I
done,
got a request
my friend.
For you, Scott.
All right, play it. What do you got? What do you want?
Go to the Uther section, the bottom Uther section, and look at, like, the Uther 025s.
025. Got it. I'll play 025. Ready? First 025.
Looking for a new hero? Well, there are plenty to choose from.
In the store, you should say. Here's another one.
Looking for a new hero? Well, there are plenty to choose from.
Oh, it's the same one. It's weird.
If you're looking for a new ride, then head to the mounts section.
It's like they took your advice, man.
I like that he says ride.
Yeah.
If you're looking for a new ride.
A sweet ride.
Your profile
later,
shows
we'll
both overall
your auto.
And...
How about this one? Hold on.
Your profile shows both overall and individual hero progression.
Okay. All right. How about this one?
New heroes are unlocked and ready for battle. Select a hero with a difficulty you're comfortable playing.
Spend some money. All right, that's fabulous.
It's a great little find.
Yeah, thank you for that. That's pretty great. All right. Well, where does that put us? I know where it puts us. Right here. It's time for a wee bit of the old core concepts, and this is where we talk to you about better ways to play the game, and we come to you from the approach of, all right, you've had a few core concepts, we passed our first 101 classes, we're now moving into a little more advanced territory. Today's topic is team fighting, all right? And we're going to make, as usual, a little disclaimer here. We're making assumptions, pretty basic ones. You're invested in playing this game as optimally as possible. And you can play around with a quick match and AI, but really this is about strategy in games that you're serious about. We're assuming you're playing with heroes you're mechanically familiar with and that you are approaching matches with the desire to win both solo queue and party games. Now, where to start with team fighting? How about this? Know your team composition, strengths, and weaknesses. Dive, kite, ambush, hybrid, special, like hammer, chogal, that sort of thing. Let's delve into that a little bit deeper. Bo, where do you begin with this idea of knowing those competitions or those compositions? Is this just as simple as like, I know all those characters because I've played them before. Therefore, I know what they're going to do and how I need to respond.
It's a combination of experience and also study. Like watching those competitive tournaments is a form of study. But there's a definite feel to what your team can do. And with them adding more and more heroes, the combinations and special case scenarios only multiply. But generally speaking, there's like two main types of team fighting groups, and that's a dive comp and a kite comp. At least that's what I call them. Their terminology may vary. But essentially, sometimes you get in these situations where, you know, there's an enemy Morales and you're in solo queue and one guy's like, you got to kill the Morales, but everybody... You don't have any gap closers. Like you'll get beaten up by four people trying to fight your way to the Morales to get the kill. It's just not what your team's composition lends itself to doing easily. So you're really fighting against the grain.
Right.
So identifying what your team's good at and not good at is really important because then you can more properly leverage its strengths. And when you're playing solo queue, you know, you can more easily recognize when other players on your team are not necessarily seeing that and, you know, dying repeatedly because of it. And you can sort of form a better analysis of, you know, how well you're doing. Because I think a lot of us sometimes are like, I guess I'm not too good because I lose a lot of games. But that's not always the case. Accurate analysis is important. So dive and kite. Dive sounds just like what it is. It means everyone's jumping in to get that Morales or get whatever target you've agreed upon. Yeah. I think the best team comp I've had for that in Hero League was we had Sonya, Artanis, Kerrigan, and Karazim, and we were just playing in sync so that when we started a fight, we'd all teleport, except for Artanis, who had to walk the slow way, to the target that we wanted. And we had a Jaina backing us up with the AoE damage. And if you can zero out that key target quicker, you win the fight. It's like John's healing philosophy. You don't need healing if you kill something fast enough.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's what diving is all about. You're not like, oh, we need lots of heals and we need lots of sustained DPS. You're going for the explosions, quick killing. Kiting's different. Kiting's the other main one, I think. And that's where it's okay to shoot the tank. That's where, like, what your tank is doing is just keeping them, keeping their guys off the back line. In the back line, like Rainers and Valas and Lunaras and even the mages, they're shooting their stuff, walking back a bit, shooting their stuff, walking back a bit. And you're trying to, you're prioritizing staying safe, healed, and dodging abilities and doing a sustained amount of damage over a period of time. So you don't need to rush to the back line to do that fight. In the long run, you'll out-sustain your opponents, and that's how you're going to win fights. Mm. Those are the two main paradigms. If you just start thinking about your team comps with those two in mind, it'll already start to increase your vocabulary with compositions.
And we talked about ambushing a little bit in a previous core concepts about who are good ambusher characters and things like that. How do they play into this whole mess? Like
sometimes comp, like if you're Nova and Zeratul, sometimes you have these special comps that are very much, it's kind of like dive, but really it's more patient. Like you're waiting, you're setting traps. I mean, Abathur is kind of like this, where a good counter to Illidan, for example, is Abathur. He steps on a mine and then, you know, your sneaky guys can go and take him out. Like what you're trying to do is look for picks, not necessarily try and go into head on team fights.
Right.
So you might have, it's not as prevalent in competitive play, but in quick match for sure, like every game has a Nova and Zeratul or multiple ones and butchers and everyone's playing ambushy, that your comp is best suited to trying to play that way.
John, go ahead. Go ahead.
Oh, and then you have hybrids of that kind of thing. Like sometimes, right. Especially in quick match when you're paired up with whatever, you have some good divers and some good kiters and, you know, hopefully you can settle with your team on how to best proceed.
Thrall's a pretty good hybrid, I think. He can sort of dive, but he can also kite pretty well. I don't know. I mean, I guess he's not that much of a diver, but he can get in there and take a lot of damage, especially if you're playing his trait right, and, you know, be a problem.
Yeah. Certain heroes are flex picks. Like, again, it's your composition, not like your individual hero. You don't be like, I'm playing a dive hero, so that means I have a dive comp. Nope, you might be a dive hero and a kite comp, and that means you need to time what you do accordingly. Good example is Greymane. He's both. Mm-hmm. He can sit and kite all day, and then it's time to like dive. And so finding that key timing is important. It doesn't mean you're in a dive comp just because you're playing a Greymane.
Speaking of which, no offense to Gilneas Pete, but I haven't seen him around.
You'll see him in the championship series.
Oh, really?
And he'll probably come back as a result of Glaurung played him a lot from Cognitive, and he was a noted Illidan player. Mm-hmm. And I think he played him really well, so he should make a comeback.
Yeah. There's one match where there's a poor Brightwing who you can tell is just pushing their luck, and he's just looking at her from a distance, and occasionally he'll fire his gun and that's it. And then he baited the Brightwing and made it look like he was going to run away, and Brightwing came out, and out of nowhere, in just an instant, he was on top of Brightwing and tore through that poor little fairy dragon like it was paper.
Oh, man. That's brutal.
It's great.
Okay.
One last little thing before we move on to the next one is also there are special ones. So if you're playing with a hammer on your team, play under the hammer umbrella. It's a different kind of game. And so hammer really turns the game on its head. Vikings will turn the game on its head because now you're playing a gank squadron. It's just different. Cho'Gall as well makes people play different, which is why people have a hard time adapting to them. So learn to recognize that your team has a composition, a way that it plays best, and learn to recognize what that is.
Yep. And when it gets tweaked by these other variables, it's a good way to think about it. John, you are a big fan of targeting the right character when we go into a team fight. If there's anyone on our team who's making sure everybody understands, damn it, we need to be on that Morales or whatever, I feel like it's you. So let's talk about team fight target priority. You want who first and who last? Who do you go for?
So it's going to vary somewhat depending on positioning. There's a lot of factors with this sort of thing, but one of the most basic rules is all things being equal, you're going to go after what is considered, as we have it in the notes, the squishiest carry, which is the character that is going to be the easiest to take down fast, but also is capable of doing the most damage or having the biggest impact to your team. So right now, a very good example of that is if you can catch a Li Ming out, that is a character that can do ungodly damage if left unchecked, especially if people start dying around her. So if you can burst her down, that is a fantastic target. Now, she's a little wily and she can teleport, and there's all, like I said, factors. But that's kind of who you want to go for. Next, you would be looking at something like an immediate threat. So this is going to be a character that maybe you know is about to do a game-changing ultimate. Maybe you know that there is a Zeratul that is about to void prison your team. If you can take him out super fast, you can avoid getting that ultimate thrown down on you. Healers, very good. We always, you know, call out the Morales is a common one to take out, because obviously if Morales is focusing on somebody really strong, you're not going to burn through that character. You know, it can be a very squishy caster type character, but with a Morales healing them, all of a sudden that fight is going to be extended and you're ultimately going to lose it if you keep trying. And like Bo said, typically you're not going to want to aim for the tanks, but if you're kiting, it might not be a bad idea to take some health off of them. I am a real big fan of not using the don't hit the tanks as like some sort of golden rule, because I have found if you can force the tanks back to a position where they need to heal or they have to leave, you have completely negated their entire purpose in the match. And I think that that advantage can't be undersold. So I understand why people say don't hit the tanks, because, you know, you're taking off just little ticks of health. But at the same time, if you can get that Muradin to have to dwarf toss out of the battle, you've now exposed the entire team while Muradin tries to get healed back up. And you can maybe then take one of these higher priority targets that you couldn't get to while Muradin was there.
Yeah, I hate that as Muradin. I hate being forced out, because then suddenly there's an exposure you weren't hoping. You know, you're kind of screwing your team. You have to get out or you're going to die and you're no good to him anyway. I'm no good to you dead, right?
Exactly.
But then you're kind of, I mean, you're leaving them naked. I hate that feeling. It's almost,
if you're divey, it's not your strategy. Like, right. But when you're just flirting, you know, then yes. Basically, what happens is, I think people comment in the chat where it's like, stop shooting the tanks. But like, the nearest available target is a tank. So either I'm doing damage to the tank, or I'm just not doing damage and waiting for an opportunity. Right. Meanwhile, they're doing damage to you. So I think it's like, it depends on the heroes and what your, you know, what the strategy is.
Yep.
Yeah, so, I think frequently we use the term don't shoot the tank, and what we're meaning is don't waste your cooldown related move. Like if you're Jaina, don't go whole hog on your combo on the frontline Muradin. Like that's not going to kill him, and unless everybody has decided to dive that Muradin for some reason, it's not going to do you much good. But if you're a Rainer, auto-attacking that Muradin, why not do it? You know, it's not costing him anything in terms of cooldowns. It's plinking away health on that Muradin and making it to where maybe later, if you need to, maybe that Jaina burst damage would actually kill that Muradin and actually have that impact. So if you're free to do it, do it.
All right.
And I would also argue, too, just the one little point of order on the squishiest carry. Sometimes it's the squishiest character, what the meta or whatever you guys agree on. But oftentimes, you also need to be paying attention to who's the worst player on the other team. Mm. If the worst player is playing the best character, kill that guy. You know, like that's also, you know, a priority. When you're playing and you identify someone as being like a weak link on a team that you can easily bully, if you want to win, then that's the shortest path to victory right there.
Nice. Positioning. Yeah. Positioning could not be more important for quality team fights. And again, there are a lot of variables to that, but generally speaking, there's a good way for you to be depending on your role. So Bo, lay out where Where should... Okay, so I'm... Let's just make a fake team comp here. I'm playing Jaina. You're playing... I don't know. Lunara. And Bo... Or, and John is playing Diablo. Okay? So, if I'm dumb, I say, oh, Lunara, you should be front line because you do so much damage and you got all that poison and you can hit their back line and I can be right behind you and do things and John can just hang out behind us in case things go bad. Wrong. Bad idea. Yeah. How should it be? How should it go?
The person you've... So if you have multiple warriors, this is a bit different, but if you're a single warrior, a tanky warrior, or maybe even not, think of it like a bike wheel laid flat over the map. Like that's just, that tank is the center of everyone's universe. That's his role in the game, is to center what's happening with the larger group. If you're splintered off by yourself, it matters less. But in team fights, he's, you know, he's the one that if you get into trouble, that's supposed to be there to peel for you, to get the bad guys off your butt so you can turn around and shoot damage. So if you're off doing your own thing, or, you know, if you're anywhere near him, that's the hot zone. So you can, if you're flanking around, like the bike wheel spins around, you can kind of flank around, just know that you're taking a risk. But ultimately, the tank, your whoever is your main warrior is centered around the fight.
Okay, that makes sense to me. John, yeah. Anything to add to that? You're a big proponent of don't be stupid in the team positioning.
Yeah, I mean, just look for the obvious things that you know you shouldn't be doing. Don't give Zagara a free 5-man maw. You know, don't do those things. Know when you should be spread out, know when you should be clumped together, know when you should be flanking. Like I cannot stress enough how important it is to learn other heroes' abilities. You may not want to learn to play Zagara, but you should learn what Zagara can do.
Right. Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, where you stand matters. Ultimately, the thing you need to be thinking about as a primer is just it. You can't just stand anywhere you want and think there's no consequence. Where you are standing is almost more important than if you're hitting your skill shots and things like that.
Like sports.
Where you are matters greatly. It can mean the difference between winning and losing.
Yeah, I think that if there was more e-sporty MOBA out there, there's not one. I mean, if you want to make the analog to actual sports, I still, every time we talk about this kind of stuff, I just feel like Heroes fits the bill more than almost any of them because it matters.
Sure, you don't put your quarterback in front of all the linebackers, right? Because then
he
gets beat up there.
Yeah, he gets sacked. You put the right guys
in football
front.
Works.
Yeah, it does. Really, it does. I mean, you have people essentially peeling. Blockers are peeling. Like there's all sorts of metaphors there that totally work, and position matters. You can't just take Nova and have her be exposed and have her stand in front of people. It's just a bad idea.
We told we weren't going to let Bo talk about sports anymore. Not since the last time.
Wait a second. Just one second. How great would it be as if they did a mod for Heroes that was like a football match? Would you guys like that?
I see all the characters totally playing like football? That. Yes. Okay. So have you played, what's that Warhammer game? Warhammer, or what's it called?
Blood Bowl.
I love Blood Bowl.
I haven't played it, but it looks good. I've always been curious about it.
It's turn-based, so it's a different animal, but I would, like, I'm a big fan of, like, Mutant League football or Mutant League hockey back in the day when EA was making those games on the Genesis, so I'd like that, like, ridiculous take on sports games. I would play a WoW or a Blizzard themed football game in a heartbeat.
Oh yeah, oh, absolutely. I've been aching for a good arcade over the top nonsensical like football or any kind of sports game really since the rise of the quasi simulation with like Madden, where it stopped being so easy to just pick up and play for people like me.
Yeah, it's just fun. I miss the fun of that, and I want fake teams. I don't care if they're NFL teams. I like Tecmo Bowl's approach. It's the Atlanta Bigger Boogers, or you know, whatever.
The Miami Sea Purposes. Porpoises.
Sea Purposes is even better.
Sea Purposes is a good team. I have a sea purpose.
I love that. I love when they do that. So I am all up for that. And if Blizzard ever wanted to do like a mobile, like football, tactical football game, oh my gosh, dude, I would play the shit out of that game, is what I would do.
Just put it right in Heroes. I think the Nexus is a weird place.
Let's talk about sustained DPS versus burst DPS. Sustain, good example, Vala, freaking Rainer, and others. Burst DPS, Jaina, and sort of KT still. He's still bursty.
he'll be back.
Yeah, and I would argue that there is... I think Li Ming's a bit of a combo, because you can play her kind of... I don't know. Her sustain's not really great, though, is it?
Well, if you don't hit a lot of your skill shots, she's a sustained DPS. But yeah. If she hit them all, she's a burst DPS. I mean, all burst DPS suffer from most of them. If you miss, then you're probably just a sustained DPS. But
yeah, you're with DPS.
Just know that there's a difference.
So and what no, you're saying you, is all Li Mings are sustained DPS, but not all Li Mings are burst DPS.
Yes.
Right, yes, exactly.
A skilled Li Ming knows how to burst, and when they do, oh man, look out. But yeah, so tell people the difference. What's the difference?
Just know when you're playing, like recognize when you're playing a character designed to be sustained in your team versus burst, because that you will not get out of pocket being like, I'm Raynor, let me charge down this Diablo and kill him. It's going to take you a while. Mm-hmm. Your DPS is designed to do a ton of DPS over a longer period of time, and so recognize. It's just like knowing your own limitations as a human being. You know, you have to reach for the stars, but you also have to, like, I don't know, deal with reality of things, too. You can't just pretend that there aren't, you know, you have to eat. It sucks to kind of eat some days when you just want to do fun things all the time. But, you know, you got to stop and make yourself a meal.
Yeah.
And so I don't even know where I'm going with this, but a sustained DPS literally takes time. So don't be, like, trying to get crazy ambush kills or think you're some sort of god at the game with a character who's not designed to do that. Recognize what the differences are and when the characters burst DPS, because Vala is a good example of someone you can build auto attack, lots of damage, but takes a bit of time, needs support, versus, you know, Wailing Arrow, Vault Wailing Arrow, multi-shot, like that can be very bursty in the right hands.
Right.
So just recognize which one is different, and also burst DPS really sucks when you burst someone and you don't kill them. It's kind of an execute move, so you kind of want to think about that too.
Yeah, when Jaina misses, when she whiffs, it's a terrible feeling. Or if she's targeting somebody who's not going to die because Morales is on point or whatever, that sucks. Oh my gosh, it sucks. And it's a lot of mana and cooldown and everything else. It just blows.
Little known fact, when she whiffs, it's also a terrible smell.
Yeah, oh man. Jaina, I liked it. It was pretty good. John, anything to add to burst versus sustain?
No, I think that covered it. This is actually one of, you know, as we go through this, one of the fun things is identifying the areas that you need work. Mm-hmm. Like even as people that are giving you tips right now, everybody can learn from this game.
Yeah.
Go back and watch the old tournaments and watch how much the pros have evolved since the early tournaments. Like everybody's learning this.
Yeah,
game.
Big time. There was a couple of games in the original dorm matches that I look at now and go, I could probably play in that. I could have.
We
could have won that one. But then, you know, now they're all just destroying it. Like, yeah, it's a different game.
And this is one for me. I like to play sustained DPS as if they are burst DPS. It is, I think that's why I am drawn to warriors. I like to be up in the business. Mm-hmm. It is very hard for me to just sit in the back and just let my damage slowly eke out over time. It's probably why I hate Lunara. So it's an area for me to work on as well, because I like to either be up in the front taking all the hits and controlling the flow of the fight, or I like to be the person running in and blowing things up. Yeah. Those are the two roles I like, and sustain couldn't be further away from both of those roles.
That's true, but you were able to do something pretty miraculous with Vala with that build that you had. That was more of a... It was a really interesting build, because it basically took her from being sustain boring to way amped up on damage, and her little plinky auto attack seemed to just burn people down in ways that they weren't expecting, so they would stand in it longer. I really liked that build. But now I think I get your thinking behind it after what you just said. It makes sense to me that you would build that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's his burst damage Vala is what he built there. All right, attack damage versus ability power and ability power. A lot of people don't understand what ability power is. We're just talking mana and in other cases other resources, right? That's what we mean.
It's literally what it says. So in other MOBAs, attack, like, people are referred to as AD carries or AP carries in some sense, where if you think of it as 2 feet, damage characters, whether we can say assassins, but all heavy damage characters lean harder on 1 foot over the other, basically. So that's why Raynor is an attack damage character. Anybody, auto attack is the attack damage, and all characters have attack damage. But there's a lot of tooltips and information that relate to one over the other, like taking spell block versus I can't remember, just regular block, I suppose. It's really important to distinguish between the two. Like, one of the things when I have a character that I'm thinking about taking block or spell block on, like Li Ming has a spell block, is I do an analysis of who has high ability power cooldowns that are really going to hurt me, because then I might take spell block because it blocks 50% and you get a lot of stacks of that. So it's just important to understand where the strong foot is on your certain characters. Almost all warriors are attack damage mostly. They don't do a ton of ability damage. Mm-hmm. So it's helpful to know where the strength of the heroes you're playing on by knowing, oh, this is an attack damage character, and thinking about the majority of your damage being of one type or the other, or mitigating one type or the other.
An easy reductive way to really think about this, if you're like me, because even like looking at our notes, I was like, what does this mean? And then it turns out it was something that I've been thinking about ever since I was playing, is where's the damage coming from? Is it coming from a right click, or is it coming from them using their, you know, Q, W, E, and R abilities? And if it's coming from Q, W, E, and R, odds are it's ability power, and if it's coming from them just auto-attacking you or right-clicking you, most likely that's attack damage. It's not 100% universal, but it's pretty close.
Okay. But note abilities that do things like Rainer's W, increase attack speed. That's an ability, but it increases his attack damage.
Mm. Yes.
It's coming from an ability, but it's affecting his attack damage. So you got to watch out for those interactions too.
Nice. Let's talk about engaging. When to engage. When to get out on your knee and give a ring to your girlfriend.
Is what they typically say.
Is that what they say? Oh, yeah. That's enough time to plan the wedding? Joke, yeah, we were. It's exact same joke, different angle. That's true. That's all right. This means great minds and all that. All right. So engaging in a fight is not always an obvious thing. And there are times when you're like, I'm going in. You get all itchy like Hudson and you just want to jump in there, right? And everybody else in the back line is like, oh, wait, we're not all here, or we're all low, or, you know, whatever. So communication is key. But let's just throw it around and say, each of us say when you think the right time is. When is the right time, Bo?
It's a depends question. So it's big. So I'm going to try and keep it simple and just say when the battle is in your favor, that's when you want to engage. You don't want to engage when the battle's not in your favor. So as you pointed out, Scott, the rest of your team's lagging to get behind or whatever, not a good time to start a fight. The point is, I think that people need to recognize when they're engaging is sometimes you're in these situations where, oh, I see an Illidan, I'm going to go fight him because it's a 1v1. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden there's four people bearing down on you. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh, I engaged a team fight, but with incomplete information, like I didn't mean to. You have to take stock of when you might actually be engaging on behalf of your team and you don't want to. Mm-hmm. Because what an engagement means is that basically everybody is in the fight. And sometimes you don't always think about that or mean to do that. And that's what ends up happening. So ideally, you want to engage when the terms of battle are in your favor, or that you want to create pressure, which again is saying the same thing, that things are in your favor.
All right. When to disengage, because that's scary. John, when do you say, get the hell out?
The exact opposite of what Bo said, when things are no longer in your favor, either because you acted with information that was incomplete or inaccurate, or when something unexpected happens. You know, maybe you thought, hey, look, we have caught this character out of place. We can get a team fight. We're all in a good position for it. Let's dive him. You dive on top of the guy. You've nearly got him burned down. And next thing you know, Rhaegar does ancestral healing. He's up to full. And now their team has cycled down to engage you back. And your team is now somewhat caught off guard because you went from a scenario where you were going to just burst down and have the number advantage to now you don't anymore. Might be time to say, hey, let's back off. Let's find a better time to have this fight. Now, that is an ultimate that's used, so that's another thing to take into consideration. But, you know, it's basically the opposite. It's when you have lost that favor in battle.
There's a bit of an art to it as well, so you don't just run away, because that doesn't work. If you're the tank and you're still alive, you're the last one out. You're going to have to fall on the grenade, basically, is what your job is. Maybe as a support as well. Uther players know this one. They get taken out real quick and they're in their healing as everyone's trying to run away and trying to keep everyone topped up. Generally, tanks and frontline supports are the ones that are going to have to throw themselves on the grenade to keep their other players up who might be more able to take camps and to do other things on the map while they're waiting for their teammates to respawn. So, you know, if you're a backline person and you think it's time to retreat, use those retreat pings. Let your tank know that you're abandoning him and that he has to go out. It's a two-way street. It also sucks when the tank's in there and everything's going fine. All of a sudden, everyone's gone and no one communicated to you that it was time to get out. So there is an art to disengaging. Most of the art is on the tank and somewhat on the support. So just, you have to recognize when, especially in solo queue, because a lot of you, I know, just play, you know, quick match or whatever, recognize when the vibe around your group is like, yep, it's time to go. No one's interested in this, taking this fight anymore, and start saving their butts.
I'm going to add one thing that'll lead us right into the next topic as well. I also think there are multiple types of disengaging. I think there is a hard disengage, which is you have decided this is not good. Maybe you've lost people. You are 100% certain that this has turned against you and you are getting out. But I would also say there is such thing as a soft disengage where it's, okay, we thought we could win this. Maybe we can't. It turns out it's a little more even than we thought. Let's start backing away. Let's start playing it safe. Let's see what happens. And the reason you do that is because there is a chance, like what Bo was saying with engaging, that maybe your enemy is going to make a mistake as they continue to either pursue you or decide what to do. Maybe you decided to go and start the boss and they came in and you decided, okay, well, they came in, let's disengage. Next thing you know, the boss has stunned the entire team and they've all lost a big chunk of health because they moved into where the boss was standing. Now it might be time to re-engage because that favor has now swung back to your side.
All right.
There's a third type too. It's called divorce. I'm full of jokes tonight.
Nice.
But I, you like know, it. Soft disengage when you can. Divorce is messy, folks.
You're like, what's the deal with heroes? You can do your best Jerry Seinfeld. I'm excited about it. All right. So re-engaging, you touched on that briefly, but
I think he got it. He nailed it front and back.
Yeah. Like, it's just what it is, and that's the time to do it, and I love the feeling of it. There's a great feeling in, ooh, hold on, guys, and like just backing off a little bit. They think you're retreating. Like, there's so much fun in that little moment, and
it's like swatting a basketball out of a net, and you're just yelling "D-die!"
Yes, it does. Like, it feels so good. Yeah. Love that.
We had this on a match Saturday on Sky Temple, where we actually right at the boss, even where we did a "Let's get the boss." Then we kind of did this little like quasi disengage because they came in and started, you know, pestering for it. Then we went back in and it turned into a whole team fight. We got the boss. We ended up wiping their entire team, but it was this big back and forth. And that actually is one of, I think, our best matches that we've had. In fact, Bo and I played a mighty aggressive Li Ming Thrall combo that felt real good that whole match.
I bet it did. Those two are an odd couple, but hey, get them in the back seat of the convertible on a Friday night, and who knows what'll happen.
Soft disengage.
Oh, yeah. Magic missile, baby. I don't know what that means. Flanking. Let's talk about flanking. Not just stake, but doing it in the game. Flanking is not flanking when one or more people are flanking, is what we have written here.
Yeah, this is more of a, I put that note in there because this is more of a pet peeve than an actual item, but literally it's the worst when you're playing a flanking character and you're clearly flanking. Like, I like to flank on Jaina because the four people get into a fight and then I pop in from some unexpected direction and blow all my cooldowns and nuke the crap out of everybody. And I ice block when they try to get at me, and then the rest of my team can descend on whatever chaos I've sowed.
Right.
But when the thing is, especially as the squishy carry, the target priority we talked about earlier, if all the squishy guys are flanking, then the team's just not gonna, you know, fall for your bait. Like, oh, let's go fight the tank. Ooh, we're so dumb. Like, they're not gonna do that. So you really only need one character on your team who's got the job of flanking. And we talk about that bicycle wheel. Mm-hmm. That's the person, like the Illidan or Greymane or Jaina is good at this. Not so much Kael'thas, but somebody either with some crazy burst. Li Ming's good for this. Crazy burst and crazy mobility. And that person is, the goal is to come from an unexpected angle and catch them with their pants down, just like you do in a shooter, because we're playing lots of Overwatch. Sure. You want to, you know, so if you have more than one person doing that on that bike wheel, then you're not going to look I don't know. It's just not going to work. One person should be flanking, I think. Unless you're doing, you know, because we talk about some high level competitive play, the whole everybody's flanking, that might be some next level stuff. But for most of us playing here, if you're playing in a five man, especially on comms, try and start with only one person coming from unexpected directions, because you just increase your odds of getting caught out, because sometimes that flanker gets caught out. Taking one death is minimally punishing for what should be a net gain in the long run for that strategy. So anyways, yeah. But if everyone on your team is flanking, then maybe try not to be the one flanking. If someone really insists on flanking as, I don't know, Uther or something.
Right.
Yeah.
Falstad is a phenomenal flanker.
He's a great
flanker. He's the best. Yeah. Oh, yes.
He's the philanthropist of flankers. He's the flank staker. He's the bank maker.
Because he can actually do it without doing it. He can be on your front line with everybody and then use his Z to pop into a flank position.
Yep.
And if you take Gust, blow your opponents right into chaos.
Yep. That's exciting for a guy on a bird. we are going to end it there, but next episode we'll have more on Team Fighting. Team Fighting 2, we'll call it, the sequel, where we talk more about things like teleports, picking, peeling, diving, ambushing, choke points, and more. So come on back for that, everybody.
It's not what it sounds like.
No, it doesn't. The more I do this voice, yeah, it's a bad idea to do that. What's this right here? Why won't that play? That's because I wasn't pushing it right. It's email time. We get emails at core@heroesforyou.com. We also take your voicemails at 801-471-0462. Today is all emails day. We have calls, but I hadn't gone through them yet, so we'll do those next time. But we got one here from Mike G. It's his rapper name. He says, "Dear Core crew, hello, fellas. I was listening to the last episode of Core, and during the roundtable segment, y'all were discussing new hero ideas." We're going to assume he's from the South. Scott was talking about ideas. Well, for Gorath, that's anything below you. So we're all the South to you, aren't we?
You're all Southern to me.
That's good. Scott was talking
about Canadian
ideas for heroes that were, I guess you could say, less conventional. I thought a fun idea for a hero would be, and bear with me here, a barracks or command center from StarCraft. All right, we're bearing with you. Of course, the unit would have to be Terran, so the player could just move it around. It would fly similar to the unit in StarCraft, so the player would have to be careful when flying around the map. The unit could have a max population of 10 or so. They can summon and produce units that are somewhere between minions and merc camps in power. More powerful units would cost more populations, so the player could summon less of the more powerful units. The unit could transform the game for the player to more of an RTS-like experience, so that's what the player would want, that's what he would play. You could even apply this idea to more Warcraft themes, maybe. Call me crazy, I look forward to what y'all have to say. Regards, Mike G. I think that's a very interesting idea. I don't know how it would work, though.
I love this idea. I mean, we talked about the Zergling idea a little bit. I think in the Sergeant Hammer is a unit.
Yeah.
I think they could go deeper with the unit. I like this idea. You can call me crazy, too, because I'm a crazy Canuck.
All right.
And I like your command center idea, Mike G.
How about this one? I had this one the other day. And then I want to hear what John thinks. What if you start out as a Zerg? What's the first form of a Zerg? The little
Zergling?
No, larva. Before that, larva. Yeah. So you start out as a larva, and instead of you having to do anything to level that up to more advanced evolutions, you keep dinging levels and hitting your, you know, the talent tiers. So every talent tier, you get to choose what you evolve into next. So I want to evolve.
Oh my God, I love this.
Yeah, isn't that a great idea? And then by the end of this thing.
That's a super cool idea.
By the end of this thing, you're some big. I mean, I know it borrows from some of the other characters' ults and some other things that Abathur does, but I think you could make a pretty unique case for taking a larva, which was still, you know, has good auto attack, has some abilities, whatever. But every time you'd hit that new tier, your abilities would do vastly different things depending on the path you took. Some are more damagey, some are healing. Some, like, this would be a great way to kind of choose your own damage dealer, tank, or healer as you go. It's a step beyond what Karazim is, certainly. But I think that would be really cool. I think that'd be a lot of fun.
That sounds awesome, especially because, like, I want to play a Hydralisk. I've loved the look of a Hydralisk since forever. I think they look friggin' cool, and I adore them, and I know that Zagara can create them, but that's not enough for me. I want to be a heroic Hydralisk. You can call him Murray if you need to give him a name. It's fine, but I want to be an awesome friggin' Hydralisk. I want to move where I do that thing to the StarCraft guy that's in the cinematic where he just keeps like using his little scythe arms on him over and over again. Everything about that design is cool to me.
Yeah, that'd be neat. And that could be what, like your damage path. You'd have a range spitting thing. You could do some melee. Like, there's just so much you could do with that.
Like, once it gets to level 20, it could be one of like 16 different things that you get by the end of it, right? Is that you build on it as it evolves?
That's the whole idea. So you could be that could also make it much more unique than the ultimate evolution you get out of, you know, the shadow looking one that what's his name makes or the little ones that Zagara makes. You could take this further than that and have it be weird hybridizations of other stuff. And you could have great dialogue with Abathur commenting on it all the time, you know.
Yeah, I was going to say, he would be stoked.
This is the ultimate evolution.
I am so excited to be here, you guys.
You have no idea. This is amazing.
I want one of the variations to be a giant larva, though. Like, you just stay larva form and just get really big.
Just a big fat larva. Or you could even be some of the grosser. Like, I need to go back to StarCraft and just look at what the possibilities are. But there are things in there that just aren't represented in the game. And, you know, planting spore colonies as you go or... You know, I don't know what it all is, but you could just have some real fun with that. So anyway, we like your idea. We like any of these ideas where you take things and have them advance RTS style through the levels is a cool idea to me. So anyway, thanks, Mike G is the real name. Will Stan. My name is Will Stan. What is going on? I have an email for you. Yeah. He says,
"You've created a whole narrative for this emailer. It's great."
Will Stan is his name. He says, "Hey guys, a few weeks ago you were talking about Li Ming's costume, and while I agree it's a little skimpy, have you seen Cammy's look in the new Street Fighter V? Super small, and her butt cheeks are completely exposed. I think Blizzard is not perfect, but there are many more games I think are much more egregious. Anyway, I don't think Li Ming was all that bad. Just my two cents." Will Stan. All right, so I would say he's right. And all you need to do to see the state of poor portrayals of women in video games is to play anything made in Korea and Japan right now. They seem to... Japan may be a little better than they used to, but man, the Korean MMOs... Woo! May as well just make them naked, dude. What's the point? You just put little straps and nothing on people.
I just don't necessarily subscribe to the nature of... You forgive the sins of one thing because the sins of the thing next to it are way worse. It's like, yeah, I murdered that guy, but I just shot him. That guy over there cut off the head, and it was real gruesome, and he turned him into a jack-o'-lantern. Sure. Like, yeah, that's pretty awful. Yeah. You shouldn't do that, but you also shouldn't shoot people. Yeah.
I think, John, we're symbiotes now because you just stole everything I was about to say. You beat me to, like, word for, like, literally, you can't be like, stealing's okay because it's not murder. So it's like, it's just an issue for the gaming community. It's worth talking about, but at the same time, we want to let, you know, they're expressions of art, and expressions of art can be disturbing or not. It's not always meant to be what we see or what the politically correct things are. So it's a fine balance. And yes, I think Blizzard strikes it way better than a lot of other companies do, who are just clearly like, we like women, so here's boobs.
Yeah.
And people are going to respond in different ways. I had a girlfriend who really liked the skimpy outfits that the fantasy characters got to wear. Like, she thought those looked great. And when she got big, bulky armor that covered everything, she was like, I don't like this. I wish there was a way, because this was before transmog was in the game. There needs to be a way to change this look because I hate this. And I don't like the way it looks. And then I was like, well, you know, that's weird coming from you is what I would say. And then she would say that my reaction was weird. So everybody's going to have their thing that they're into and what they think is right.
And I just have to clarify, I didn't like it, not because it was like a women's empowerment thing or like you're cutting out. It's because anyone who cuts out shorts, cuts their pants that, like, if I cut my jeans like that, it would look bad, and it looks dumb here. That's what I, like, it's more just, I don't think it looks cool.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm at.
I'm like, I don't think that looks badass. I think it just looks weird.
Yeah.
And
it looks weird. It looks like a poor, it looks like a wardrobe challenge that went poor. You've made a bad choice in your life.
You know? You didn't have enough money for pants.
No.
It's that one person who's like trying really hard to be fashionable, but just really not succeeding. And, you know, we love that person, but it's just hard to break the news to them that whatever they're doing is just not working.
Yeah.
And so. I agree. Cammy should pop it out a little bit.
Oh, my gosh. Cammy with the... I went and looked at her in five. Good Lord. Like, it's... You may as well... Seriously, just don't put pants on her then. Just have her running around with her vajayjay flapping in the wind. Who cares at this point? Like, they're not even... Nothing's covered up. It's just, like, skin painted. Like, I don't know what they're thinking. But, look, that game's always been that way. And you don't see Ken's wiener hanging out. It's usually the women. It's usually the women, right? Like, they don't... They're not... And that's my problem, is I just... It's so one-sided. Occasionally, you'll find a game where the dudes just got a little cup and...
I don't know. They had that guy in Street Fighter 4 who was all about pouring oil all over his body. Oh, my gosh. Oh, I couldn't deal with that.
I forgot about that guy. He was great.
I couldn't deal with that for whatever reason. I've always had this weird, like, just aversion to oil in general. And just, like, him constantly pouring oil all over his body. It's just like, you win. I give up. You've won before this fight has even begun.
Well... Take that, Widerstand, and let us know.
Oh, my God, Cammy's really bad. I just looked at a photo. Wow.
Yeah, it's bad, dude. She was always, like, bad, but she's real bad now.
Like, so. It's not even creative. It's just, it's like, she wears a green thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's green paint. That's what, yeah.
It's green terrible. Paint. She's got green paint, and that hurts when you got to scrub that off. Anyway.
just ask Spider-Man. He knows all about
scrubbing off. He knows all about it. That's right. Was that in this show? I guess it was. It was earlier tonight. That's how my memory works. That's it for your emails. Thank you for those. Say, what'd you say?
Did you walk into a closet, Scott? No, were you in a Stephen King novel?
Oh, hey, that new one comes out today. I got to watch that tonight. 11/22/63. Great series, everybody. Hulu exclusive. Go watch it. It's great. It's based on a book I really liked. Core@heroesforyou.com is where those emails came from. You can also send us voicemails once again at 801-471-0462. And that is the end of the show. Big thanks to everybody for listening. Heroesforyou.com is the website. Do not forget, if you go there and click the link for the YouTube page, you'll find all this YouTube goodness that we're putting up, including more from the charity brawl going up today. I meant to already do this, but you guys reminded me today. /join us in the game, /join Frog Pants and play with other players just like you. I hear that we are very low numbers in the EU, despite the fact that a lot of our downloads come from the EU. So I don't know what you guys are doing, but get in there and start making friends. All right. Yes, slackers. Core Heroes on Twitter. John_Jagger on Twitter. I'm at Scott Johnson, and Bo is at Bo Schwartz on Twitter. That's going to do it for us, for me, for John, and for Bo. We'll see you next time. Oh, I have to play this part. Almost forgot.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
You guys, I've never made a podcast before.
were you rocking out?